Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Connecting Faith is underway once again. I'm Neil Stavem, Ryan Nisley at the controls, Grace Reif there at the screen calls. And we're looking forward to taking your calls today. Some very practical helps on the way today. We're talking about work, calling, career, some of those things. And you know, Ryan, today is Administrative Professionals Day. Today.
Yes.
So, and that used to be, we used to call them secretaries, I guess, right?
That's true. There's been a gradual sort of evolution of the terminology.
So I'm not sure. What would we call you, I guess, in terms of you're the show producer, but
I would like to be called the emperor.
Okay, all right.
Is that
sure.
All right?
I think that, well, that does sum it up pretty well. I think there's no need to, I mean, that does, if you want a word that explains what exactly it is that you do and who you are, that.
Thank you so much. I think we've got it.
We can move on. Let me introduce my guest then, who is the president, not an emperor, but he is the president of 48 Days LLC. Dan Miller has been our guest in the past. Specializes in creative thinking for increased personal and business success, and he believes that meaningful work blends our natural skills and abilities, our unique personality traits, and our dreams and passions. And Dan has written several great works, including 48 Days to the Work You Love, No More Dreaded Mondays, and one that he co-wrote with his son here not too long ago called Wisdom Meets Passion, When Generations Collide and Collaborate. And I think last time we had Dan on, we were talking about that one, and it's just that's a wonderful resource as well. We want to talk a little bit about Dan. Welcome, first of all. Good to have you with us here on Connecting Faith. Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much. After hearing Ryan, maybe I need to reevaluate my job title.
Well, sure. If Thursday's the new Friday and, you know, and 40's the new 50, then apparently Emperor's the new president or something. So anyway.
Well, you're so right. There's been a real gradual shift in titles. We hear the most creative titles out there, which I think is healthy.
We don't
need to get locked into old patterns. Let's just shake it up and do some new innovative things.
Sure. By the way, I think tomorrow, I read someplace, tomorrow is take your son or daughter to work day. I mean, are people still doing it? Is that a helpful thing to do, or has work changed so much that maybe doesn't really make that much difference?
That has really changed. I mean, it used to be if you were working even on an assembly line or you're working, you know, at a factory or you're working at the local mill or grocery store, it made a lot of sense to take your son and daughter there. These days, when 90% of the kids are going to sit there and just watch their mom or dad sitting at a computer screen, it loses some of its unique value. And that's pretty unfortunate because a lot of kids cannot describe what their mom and dad do. All they know is they leave in the morning, come back at night, usually worn out, exhausted, and frustrated, but they really have no sense of what they do at all. And so these children are entering the workplace without a real sense of what real work is. You know, I grieve that we've lost internships, apprenticeships, the kind of things where children used to work alongside their parents to learn real work skills. And a lot of them now are ending up coming out, popping out with a college degree in their hand and really have very little sense of what the real workplace is like.
Mm-hmm. In fact, maybe it's kind of a side note, we could get into it. I was looking at, I think it's 48 Days to the Work You Love, but you have just a little section in there where a little family picture from back in the old days on the farm in Ohio, and just talk about how, you know, you could kind of contrast or at least how you approach your upbringing, and maybe just talk a little bit about that, because some of us say, well, yeah, I didn't have all the options, and, you know, others had, you know, had easier life path than me, but just say a little bit of word about your background and maybe just describe that picture in two ways.
Well, you're referring to a picture that I have also in Wisdom Meets Passion, my
there
latest
That's
book.
Maybe it is,
and,
yes. Yeah.
And in there, I said, you know, we're all telling our life story, and we can choose how we tell that. Now, I grew up on a farm. We were very, very poor. My dad was Bible occasional pastor at a little tiny church in town, but didn't make any money from that, so we eked out a living as farmers. I usually got a pair of blue jeans as my one Christmas gift, my blue jeans for the next year. And, you know, we didn't have radio or TV in the house because of our legalism and our religion, and it was very somber. There wasn't a lot of laughter. You know, I go on and on about the kind of life that I was born into. You know, if only I were born into a different family. Or I can tell that same story in a much different way. You know, in my family, we made use of everything. You know, I would go to the dump and find things that other people discarded and turn them into really creative toys that I had. I learned how to go door to door, you know, selling Christmas cards just to make a little extra money. And not having radio or TV made me very fond of books very early, something that continues to serve me extremely well today. And the fact that we were legalistic and didn't wear fancy clothes, you know, didn't wear neckties. And yet when I grew up, I realized there were a lot of good reasons for not wearing neckties, let alone spiritual legalism. So, you know, the things that I gained in that environment are invaluable in helping shape the way that I think and see new opportunities today. But we all have a life story to tell. My wife recently spoke at Tennessee Prison for Women out here and went through that scenario, that section in that book, and reminded them, even there, that they could choose how to tell the stories that they have. And I think that's a very optimistic thing. You know, too often I hear people are just discouraged and down and think there's nothing that can be done today and the economy's bad, the wrong people are in the White House, and on and on and on. I'm thinking, wow, you know, they just determined what their reality is going to be because of that attitude and the expectation that things are bad. Now, this is not just some, you know, frivolous, positive mental thinking kind of exercise, but, you know, as Christians, we ought to be able to see how God has gifted us, beauty that he's put into nature, and the new opportunities that are all around us. We ought to be a source of hope and inspiration to anybody that meets us.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dan, and that I hope just that little reminder encourages some people today who are maybe facing some discouragement because the economy has been difficult for many, and we know the statistics. I mean, unemployment is a reality. By the way, and if you're in a maybe a career transition mode or just have some questions about it, or maybe you have a son or daughter graduating from some level of maybe high school or college, or just looking at the transition or needing some insight into how to make work and passion come together. I'd love to have you join us with your conversation today at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. I'll give you a chance to start queuing up here as we continue talking with Dan Miller. 877-933-2484. Or if you want to send us an email, you can go online, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, or you can go to Facebook at Connecting Faith and Neil Stavem and connect with us. So that way, I'd love to get your question, your comment, or your story. Dan, let's talk a little bit, though, because statistics are certainly real. I mean, reality is that there are kind of tough times that we've been going through. Give us a sense of what's going on in the workplace today.
Well, we hear a lot about unemployment and companies laying off. But then we also have to realize what makes news. And it's negative things that make news. So the media jump on the fact that somebody is closing down a factory or somebody's laying off 20,000 people. What we don't hear about as much is the reshaping of work models that we have in America. And by that, I mean, we are rapidly approaching the time when only 50% of the American workforce will be employees. Now, I didn't say we're going to have 50% unemployment. That's not true. Unemployment is a very reasonable rate as we speak. We're always going to have 5 to 7% of the people who are kind of in between that are going to show up as unemployed. But what those figures don't reflect then are the people who are creating new work models. And we hear terms like consultant, contingency worker, and contractor, temp, freelancer, electronic immigrant, entrepreneur, and the list goes on, that of terms that describe real work models that look a little different than what maybe we have been used to. those things aren't reflected in the unemployment rolls. A lot of people are showing up as unemployed when they simply have started, you know, at a lawn care business or a window washing business or delivery service, or they're doing something that generates income, perhaps even more than they were used to in a previous job. But they still show up. It's hard for the government to get their hands around those figures that reflect really what in the workplace today.
Well, what about another statistic that talks about how many people seem to be dissatisfied with work? Talk about work satisfaction. Has that changed?
Well, you can, it's the old adage, you know, you can get statistics that say anything you want to, depending on how you word the questions. You can get 80% of the people to say they're unhappy with their jobs. Now, there are a lot of people who would change jobs if they could or knew how. And that breaks my heart because it's not that difficult to do that. And rather than being in something that is not fulfilling, yeah, I encourage people to take a fresh look at how has God gifted you? What are you a candidate for? And hold your head high, go up and out there and let people know what it is you do that brings value to your organization. There are companies looking for people who understand that basic concept. Companies are not looking to give people jobs, but they're looking to have people on their team who can help them accomplish their goals. So all you need to do is be able to be clear on how are you going to help a company accomplish their goals. It's not just a matter of sitting in a cubicle, filling a slot, and you get a paycheck on Friday. I mean, everybody is interviewing for their position every single day. If you got a job 10 years ago and you're still in that job, you really are interviewing every single day when you go in. The company has to ask themselves, does what you provide still have enough value for the compensation that they're giving you? So there's a lot of changes going on out there. And there are people, you hear about discouraged workers. I mean, that's actually a government term, which means people who have stopped looking for work because they're convinced there's nothing out there. Now, that's a horrendous way to frame that for anybody to be that discouraged. But I don't think it's a realistic kind of terminology, because a lot of those people, even if they feel forced into it, are finding other ways to generate income that may not look like that traditional 8-to-5 job.
We're going to talk more in a moment with Dan Miller. We'd love to have you join the conversation, too, if you want to talk a little bit about passion, finding a way to connect your, discover your true calling at work, igniting your passion. No More Dreaded Monday is one of the books from Dan Miller. In fact, we've got a copy. We can give that away here at the end of the hour. We've got his latest that he co-wrote with his son called Wisdom Meets Passion When Generations Collide and Collaborate. It's got some great insight for how we understand the differences in generations and their approach to work and career. And Dan's also written 48 Days to the Work You Love. He is the president of 48 Days LLC. And we're going to talk more with Dan in a moment. The number is 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Call Life of Praise, and we would love most of all that our life would be reflecting the way that God has created us and gifted us, and that and all that we do and say would bring glory to God. That is Paul's encouragement to us in the Colossians, and a good word for us today as we talk with Dan Miller, Dan, president of 48 Days LLC, and he's authored the best-selling book, 48 Days to the Work You Love, No More Dreaded Mondays, the new one called Wisdom Meets Passion When Generations Collide and Collaborate that he co-wrote with his son. And Dan has been a coach and a consultant, an entrepreneur for many years, and is giving us some great advice today about work and passion and calling. And Dan, I noted in I think it was Wisdom Meets Passion, quote from Oz Guinness is, "We may be at times be unemployed, but no one ever becomes uncalled." And I think it's probably worth talking about. You know, I think we wonder, is it really possible to find our calling and our passion in today's competitive work world, where we assume that, you know, we just need income, maybe?
Boy, that's a tough question. Some people feel like we have to just ignore everything we know about ourselves and what God's call is just to confront the realities of life. There may be short periods of time where that's true, but it should be a short period of time because there are too many opportunities to settle for less than really living out our call on a day-by-day basis. And we have to distinguish what our calling is. If somebody loses a job, that does not change their calling. You have to distinguish between three terms we tend to use interchangeably, those being calling, career, and job. Calling is the big picture, and that should include our purpose, our destiny, our mission, how we want to be remembered, the legacy we want to leave. So we could say that you want to help reduce pain and suffering in the world as an example of what your calling is. Career, then, is a subset. And what are the careers that would allow you to do that? Well, you could be a physician, a sports therapist, a massage therapist. You could be a pastor, teacher, politician. There are a lot of careers that would fully embrace and give you opportunity to help reduce pain and suffering in the world. Job, then, is the smallest component. If you are a nurse, as an example of that example that I just used, I mean, there's probably 4,000 opportunities for nurses here in Nashville, Tennessee, where I live. So losing a job does not change your calling. We just simply have to look at that and say, okay, if the job went away, that doesn't mean that God has uncalled me. That's exactly like you said from the quotation from Oz Guinness. Nobody is ever uncalled. Even pastors, who oftentimes I have dealt with pastors in the last few years here, who either by their own choosing or being forced out, are having to take a fresh look at that. What am I going to do now? It doesn't mean they're being called or that their calling changes. It just means we have to find a new application of their calling. And that really is not that challenging to do. I know it's frustrating, you know, when people hit that period of time or when they do, you know, lose a job. But losing jobs is going to continue to happen. We can't control that. There are a lot of very competent, loyal, faithful, good people who are going to lose their jobs today. But that doesn't mean they've lost their calling. We just simply have to look at what is a new application of that calling and continue on.
If you're in a time of transition, I'd love to have you join the broadcast today at 877-933-2484. Get some good practical help today from Dan Miller, who has authored several books, including 48 Days to the Work You Love, Wisdom Meets Passion, No More Dreaded Mondays. Let's talk, Dan, a little bit about how to determine our transferable skills, and then how do we communicate those to a prospective employer? I mean, that's pretty important early on, isn't it? That we decide what is our skill set, our passions. How do we, I guess, find those first, and then communicate those to a prospective employer in maybe a different field?
Absolutely, and then your last phrase there is pretty significant because a lot of people who worked in real estate or the mortgage industry. And then we see a massive decline in those industries, and people think, well, I'm unemployable. No, you should have transferable skills, transferable areas of competence. So if you're good at budgeting and forecasting or customer service or graphic design, data input, whatever it is, those things will have application in a wide variety of industries and professions. So in going through a change, even if the change is unwelcome and unexpected, it's a great time to take a fresh look at what do I have as those areas of competence that would have value to another organization. You can move from the nonprofit world into the for-profit world. You can move from industry to industry, but nobody has skills that are only applicable in one setting. Even if you're in the medical environment and you're used to, you know, drawing blood, I mean, there are still other things. It may be your ability to relate to people, to put people at ease, to encourage, to give them hope. I mean, there are other skills that you have that are going to be applicable, even if some of the details of what you were doing previously are no longer in place. We ought to be clear on what those areas of competence are at any given time. See, I encourage people, Neil, to see themselves as self-employed at some level. Now, this is not to be negative or suspicious in any way, but it's to recognize you really are working for yourself. If you choose to have one customer, which would then look like a pretty traditional job, that's fine. But once you really accept responsibility for the work that you do, for getting paid for results, not just your time, it opens up a whole world of new opportunities, and you start to see possibilities that maybe you had overlooked previously. certainly understanding your skills and abilities, your personality traits, your values, dreams, and passions. What are those things you see recurring that you're drawn to? That's how we get a clear sense of what God has positioned and prepared us for.
So I was going to ask you, should we all be entrepreneurs? But if we're all self-employed, that's a good visual reminder for day-to-day assignments, isn't it? About what we who we're serving and who our clients are.
That's right. And you know, the line between employee and entrepreneur has really been blurred. There's not that dramatic distinction between, well, you just, you know, go, you don't have to think about it, you just go, show up, put in your time, get a paycheck, or you're going to be, you know, Donald Trump or Ted Turner out here. No, it's not just that black and white. You may be a bookkeeper at a company, but the company is struggling, and you realize you have a clear set of skills that would have application for small businesses that aren't large enough to use you 40 hours a week, but could use you 2 or 3 days a month. So you simply find additional customers, as I already framed that, where you may now have 5 or 6 customers rather than just one, but you're still doing what you know you do really well. That's a very soft transition. That person may never look like an entrepreneur. You may never see a building with their name in the front or even a business card. But they're just somebody who knows what it is they do well, and they found a reasonable way to stretch, to leverage how they do that. And usually what I just described also increases a person's income dramatically.
We've got a couple minutes left before the break, so we may not have time to get the full answer, Dan. But let's take Mark's call. He's listening in on Faith 1090 and has a question about his true passion. Mark, go ahead. You're on. Give us your question to Dan.
Well, my question for you is, I started my family early age. I met and married my wife, and we've been married for 13 years. But what has happened during that time is I started a job that I thought that I enjoyed. I build roads for the local government here in Iowa, and there's times where I enjoy it quite a bit, and then there's times where it's just like, I don't want to be here. This is not what I want to do. And now my wife has a disease that makes it so she cannot work at all. So now I feel like I'm kind of trapped. I'm the sole breadwinner. So for me to quit a job that pays the bills and provides a decent living for my family, I also had to take on another job. So I basically work 2 jobs, 40 hours a week at one, and then 20 at another one being a custodian. And then my true passion is automobiles. I love them. I like looking at them. I like shining them. I detail cars on the weekends when I have time.
All right. Mark, I know we're right on top of a break here. Let me give you a quick answer to what is certainly more complicated of the life question. I commend you for doing what's necessary, jumping the game and making that happen. What you want to do, though, is get clear on what the ideal would be. What would you move to? You've identified the things you would be moving from. And when somebody's looking at what they're moving from, it can lead to discouragement, frustration, despair, and a lot of things. But as soon as you get really clear on what you're moving to, then we see optimism, hope, and boldness and enthusiasm kind of spring forward, replacing all those negative emotions. So take your idea. You don't have to burn any bridges, and don't do that. But start to imagine, what would it look like for you to be involved in the automobile industry? Now, I love cars. I'm a car guy from the top of my head to the tip of my toes. Start to identify, what would that look like? And you may replace the 20-hour position that you're doing with something as a test. What if you found and fixed up a couple cars a month and made $1,000 a piece on them? You know, would that give you more time flexibility and replace the income you're getting from the 20 hours? And then ramp it up. I mean, come up with 20 ideas you could do with cars. They may not all be traditional employee positions. If you have some skills, good work skills yourself, what would that look like? What would the possibilities be so you could start replacing significant income, give yourself more flexibility? And I'm convinced you can do it. There are some really cool opportunities involving cars today.
Dan, we'll come back and kind of pick up that on the other side of this short little break. You can join us with your call at 877-93-FAITH. Some practical helps today as we talk career calling, 877-93-FAITH.
Coming through the storm. Oh no, never let go.
good word. Something we want to hang on to in the midst of life's uncertainties when it comes to work or anything else, that God never lets us go. 877-933-2484 is the number. That's 877-933-2484 if you have a question today, or just maybe just would like to find out a little bit more about making some transitions in work. We're talking today with Dan Miller, who's been our guest in the past, and so appreciate him. He's authored the wonderful book called 48 Days to the Work You Love. No More Dreaded Mondays, and the Wisdom Meets Passion, something that he wrote with his son, who is living in, is it East Africa? Yeah, isn't it? Or West, East Africa, isn't it?
East Africa. They were in Mombasa. They just moved to Nairobi, a little bit inland, but still on the east side.
Yeah, Wisdom. Yes. Wisdom Meets Passion. Dan Miller's my guest today. He's a life coach and career coach and author and speaker. And we'd love to take your calls, 877-933-2484. We're talking with Mark a little bit ago, talking about he'd love to get into maybe detailing cars or things. And you said don't burn bridges. So is there a way that we can sort of keep the income stream coming in the meantime? Is it a matter of just sort of doing some experimenting, or do we have to sort of jump in with both feet and say, I'm committed to doing this no matter what?
Most things we can experiment. I mean, that's the fun thing about the work environment we're in today. Most things we can experiment. So what I look for is a transition plan, not to burn any bridges, not to reduce income that you're currently getting, but to try an idea. What could you do? And then we can have some kind of a benchmark for making a full transition. Now, a lot of times, the people that I work with, we look to duplicate their current income in a side venture before they make any changes. Now, if you're looking to just go from job to job, that's impossible to do, because if you're working 40 hours a week, if you apply for a new job, you're going to have to just make the full switch to do that. But a lot of the ideas that people are drawn to, like what Mark was talking about, things you could do with cars, can be done on the side or evening weekends. Now, this is not to take a family man, a father and a husband, and just turn him into somebody that's working 100 hours a week. What I look for is a 90-day transition. We can endure a lot for 90 days. So if we know it's leading to something, then we can make that transition and pull double duty where necessary. So I look for a complete transition, even in something entrepreneurial, creative, non-traditional, somebody's moving into. I want to see on paper that we have a plan for making a complete transition in 90 to 180 days. That's 3 to 6 months. So this is not to go on and on and on year after year, but it's to be an intense burst of activity so to allow you to make that complete transition.
Is the 48 days to the work you love, is 48 days still realistic, or is 90 days more realistic today?
Well, when I talked there about something that would be totally entrepreneurial, where you are just starting with nothing, that a 90-day period is going to be certainly a reasonable minimum. 48 days is still reasonable for creating your plan. And that's really what the 48 days come. 48 days is enough time to assess where you are, get the advice and opinion of other people. The Bible tells us there's safety in a multitude of counselors. Choose the best 3 or 4 options. Do a little bit more research. Select the best one and act. Now, that can be done in 48 days. That means that you then act. That means that you have secured a new job or started a new business. But that doesn't mean, that you have fully replaced your income in the first 48 days. That means that you've reshaped and have a start, and now you're engaged in the game.
The number is 877-933-2484. I've got some copies of Dan's book, and we'll do a little drawing here at the end of the hour and find a resource that would be encouraging to you, 48 Days to the Work You Love, or No More Dreaded Mondays, or Wisdom Meets Passion. That's called When Generations Collide and Collaborate. You're talking today to Dan Miller. We're talking about work today, and you can connect with us at 877-933-2484.
You know, Dan, as we talk about these transitions from career point to career point, I think about kind of the start of career, and so many of my friends are fresh-ish out of college, and they're not working in the fields of their study. They want to, but for right now, they've not been able to find that, and they're kind of wondering, what are some steps, what are some practical ways they can move towards those things that they really have studied for and prepared for?
Boy, that really opens the door to, I know, what is frustrating for a lot of people. I mean, we have some very antiquated academic models and continue to turn people out with degrees in English Lit and political science and geophysics and so on and so forth that have very little application for real work for which you can be paid. We know that 10 years after graduation, 80% of college graduates are working in something totally unrelated to the college degree. Now, here's the key, Ryan, and this is not to diminish the value of a college degree, but it's to let us know that rarely does it position us for one thing only or force us into a rut from which there's no escape. College is just an ongoing process of personal growth and self-discipline. There's a lot of things that happen there beyond just the knowledge that you cram in between your own two ears. So it's a preparation. It really takes some work experience for people to refine more clearly what it is that they're a candidate for and what they want to do. So those early years of doing things that don't seem to be totally related to the college degree, that's totally fine. Just go ahead and do that. Just get involved in the game of life. You're going to get a lot of insight and clarity in those first few years of working anyway. Now, the bottom line is there's a whole lot of college degrees that really don't have a lot of applicable value. So, again, we have to be confident that we're developing personal skills that make us have value to organizations beyond just having that those two little initials behind our name and thinking that that somehow is going to open the door. People don't, or companies don't hire degrees. They hire people that they like, know, and trust.
Dan, did you get your – you have several degrees behind your name, I think, right?
Did you get
Did you get those in sort of succession early on as a young man, or did you – was that something you did as an adult?
Well, that's a great question. I went right into college out of high school as an escape from the farm. So that I did do right away. I knew it would help broaden my options. Then when I got my bachelor's degree in psychology, I worked as a therapist for 4 years before going back to get my master's in clinical psychology. But those degrees in psychology had more to do with my own personal development and understanding than they did to position me on a particular career path. I never had any desire to, you know, just work as a counselor. So it was really self-study more than anything. After I got my master's degree, I got involved in all kinds of entrepreneurial ventures. And it was 18 years later that I then began my doctoral studies. So it had nothing to do with me thinking that I would get a piece of paper that would give me a better job. I was already, you know, involved as an author, coach, speaker, but I just wanted the self-learning. I wanted the knowledge that I could get from working in my doctoral degree. So it didn't happen just in short sequence, and it had really very little relevance to thinking that I was going to make myself more employable. It really had more to do with just my own personal growth.
We'll call you the work doctor, and the doctor is in, and we're going to take another call. This is Dan listening in to Faith 900. Dan has a question for you for Dan Miller. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is really more from a practical side of things, and that so if you decide to make this transition, are there things that you can recommend to cover things like benefits that play into the picture, whether it's medical or investments, retirement? Have you done any work relative to that side of it in making this transition? Can you point to resources to you know have gap filler type of medical benefits?
Yeah, that's such a big issue, Dan. How do we deal? I mean, that can sometimes trap us, I suppose, right? I mean, we need the benefits for our family, and so talk about that a bit.
We do, and I love to talk about this. And yes, we've done a lot of research on this, and as it relates to medical benefits, if you go to 48days.com under useful resources, you'll see a link there that takes you to a massive section on the options for you to get medical coverage if you're not an employee. Now, here's the key. Insurance companies love people who work for themselves, who are not employees. Here's why. If somebody's an employee, they have full coverage. They get up in the morning, got a scratchy throat. They think, I'll call in sick. I'll run by the doctor to make it legit. Spend the afternoon on the golf course. What if somebody has a little lawn care business of their own and they wake up with a scratchy throat? They're going to get out there and just go to work, and by 10 o'clock they feel better and go on. Insurance companies know that. They know that they have better risk with people who are self-employed and entrepreneurs. Now, I know I just made some broad sweeps there, but they are aggressively looking for people like us. The government has made provision for people like us through the HSA, the Health Savings Account. That is an amazing program where I put money, that's what I have, I put money into that, so it comes right off the top. I don't pay taxes on the money that I put in there. Any expenses that I've got come right out of there, and then I still have a cap, like a $7,000 deductible for any major expenses. It's not complicated at all to get health insurance, unless there's some major pre-existing condition. That would be the only time where it would be, we'd have to look at it differently, for sure. But now, here's the other thing about benefits. I mean, we have to be realistic. Benefits are nothing but money. If you have a company car, so you get a $300 a month allowance for that, or a 401k contribution like you talked about, some of the other things, those all translate into money. But what if somebody's making $30,000 a year and they have the opportunity to do something on their own and make $70,000? Can we replace the benefits they had? You better believe it. Have I always been responsible for my own medical, my own retirement, my own vacations? Yeah, absolutely. But I've never had any kind of ceiling on what my earning potential is just by doing things that God has gifted me to do and doing them in kind of creative ways.
Good word. Thanks, Dan, thanks for your call. Let's go to Mark listening in. Why is that? Mark, you're on with Dan Miller. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm over 50, and I'd really like to get into consulting. Is there, what's the fast track to figure out how to do that, and with the, you know, tax liability and all that that goes into that? Basically, your website sounds great. I'll have to check that out. But any other things that would help in that regard?
Sure. Well, if you are going to be a consultant, we assume that you're going to draw on something that you already have proven expertise in doing. So if you're in a company and you've been doing a particular kind of work and you're going to move out and just do that one area of expertise, that's a pretty gentle transition. One of the things that I often ask people who say, I want to coach, I want to consult, is, you know, I say, are people coming to you now asking for your advice and opinion in that area? If they are, it's probably an easy transition to position you as a real consultant. Now, as a consultant, you're going to want to have a clear marketing plan. What are you going to do to fill your schedule? Who is your target audience? What are you going to do to get in front of them? Having the skill to produce what it is you do in terms of product or service is one part. But about 80% of the process and success as a consultant is being able to effectively market what it is you do. Now, there's another list I have there at the48days.com. If you go to useful resources, there's 48 marketing tips. These are all free resources. You can just open it up. There's 48 ways that you can fill your schedule and position yourself. Now, you don't have to do all 48, but you need to select two or three that you're going to do really, really well. There's nothing complicated about the taxes. I mean, moving from an employee, you would no longer get a W-2. If you're doing consulting, you're going to get from companies a 1099. That means that they have not withheld anything. You're going to have full responsibility for the taxes. No big deal. Nothing complicated at all. I mean, depending on where you are, you ought to plan on about 20 to 25% of that is probably going to be needed to be set aside for taxes. So you do that, file taxes on April 15th like everyone else. You're going to show miscellaneous income because of the way that you've created income. Not complicated. Millions of people are doing it very successfully.
Dan, anything unique as far as the 50-plus worker maybe looking for in a transition or looking for work today? I mean, you know, it's or I think in one of your books you talk about, you know, an older worker is has a lot of benefits.
Absolutely. There are the hottest segment of career fairs today are the over 50 career fairs, meaning these are companies that are specifically targeting over 50 workers. They're scared to death of Gen X and Gen Y coming into the workplace. They don't have the sense of loyalty, the kind of work ethic or experience or maturity that we've come to expect from the baby boomers at all. So if you're over 50, you've got a lot of advantages where companies are saying, wow, here's somebody who's proven themselves. They do have the work ethic, responsibility that we're looking for. So there's really nothing different. There's no disadvantage in today's workplace in being over 50. Now, in being a consultant, there's a tremendous advantage because nobody wants a 25-year-old consultant. Consultant implies that you've got years of experience in a particular area that you're going to bring to the table. So you need to be over 50 to do that with any kind of credibility, and that ought to really help you open the doors quickly.
I just had you talk about that so I can give Ryan a bad time. But
I knew that, too. I can tell.
You can, Dan Miller is my guest. He's a coach, a trainer, a speaker. He's a writer, a successful business person. Books include 48 Days to the Work You Love, and check out his website for a lot of resources, 48days.com. And we're going to talk more in just a moment. Our phone number is 877-933-2484. If you have a question, we can get another call or two in. 877-93-FAITH, or you can check out online and leave us an email. That way, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. In a moment, I want to talk with Dan a little bit about the clear marketing plan, particularly as it relates to pursuing work. If you're out of work, what's the strategy for keeping at it and even get those interviews and some tips there as well? We'll get to that in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith, talking today with Dan Miller. Dan is an author. He's written several books, including 48 Days to the Work You Love. One of the new ones he wrote, co-wrote with his son, Jared. It's called Wisdom Meets Passion, When Generations Collide and Collaborate. You can find out more about Dan's writings. He does a regular podcast as well. And you can find out more online at 48days.com. The number's 48days.com. And talking today about careers, calling, transition. Dan, I know one of the things you address in your books and have some good advice on is sort of our doing our own marketing plan in terms of maybe getting the interviews. I mean, the statistics suggest that, you know, people looking for work really don't spend that many hours a week looking for work.
That's exactly right. That's why we hear those very discouraging statistics, like it takes 30 days for every $10,000. So if you want a $60,000 a year position, it's going to take 6 months. I mean, that's horrendous. But that's because of the way most people do a job search. They just stick their toe in the water, and they're going to make two or three contacts a month. What I suggest is a very intense burst of activity in that 48-day plan where you contact 20 to 30 prospective companies. Now, this doesn't mean that they are running ads for a position. We have to realize how few, only about 12% of positions are ever promoted, advertised in any way. That means 87% are in what we call the hidden job market. But you can find those easily by simply identifying companies in your target market, in your target audience, the kind of companies you want to work for, that would fit the criteria you've already established in advance. You contact them. They aren't advertising. They may not need anything, but that's exactly how we find those wonderful hidden opportunities. And we hear from companies who say, how did you know we needed somebody like you? Well, we didn't, but we just took the initiative knowing that there was a potential match of what I had to offer and what you're trying to do. So this is a very active approach, and if you identify those 20 to 30 companies, then there's a three-step process that we use that gets results every time, and that is to send first an introduction letter. So it requires nothing of the recipient, but it just says, this is my skill set. I'm looking for opportunities in this area. In the next 4 or 5 days, you're going to receive from me a cover letter and resume. Then you do that. What we're doing in this process is creating what we call in marketing top-of-mind positioning. Now, a lot of times, especially Christians, are way too reticent to really, you know, it seems like they're promoting themselves. And shouldn't we just wait on God? We know that pride goeth before the fall, and all those things hold us back, and we end up in a dark closet. You're discouraged. We need to hold our head high, shoulders back, let people know what it is that God has equipped us to do. And in doing that, the three-stage process, introduction letter, then the cover letter and resume, then a phone follow-up. And people cringe at doing that. But if you just send out resumes, statistics are you're going to need to send out about 256 to have a chance of getting a job opportunity. If you combine that with a phone call, it drops to about 1 out of 14. If you combine that with an introduction letter, We get even more. That's why in 48 days, I've got an actual story in there about a young guy who had 6 job offers in 10 days, just simply followed the plan. He was too green to have any resistance to it. I just laid it out. He did it. 6 job offers in 10 days. And yes, even in this economy, don't think this is something that just happened a long time ago. These are things that I'm hearing about every single day.
And is there maybe just a word of advice in terms of getting that interview, a face-to-face discussion? What one thing should we avoid or should we make sure to do?
Make sure that you recognize nobody hires prior to the interview. They would be foolish to do so. You don't want to give somebody enough information on your resume that they could make an intelligent decision. All you want them to do, you want it to do, is whet their appetite so they want to see you face to face. Face to face is when you have an opportunity to let them know you're somebody they want to have on their team. A lot of people assume that if they got an interview, the company's already decided, well, this is the person we want. Not true. Interview is where you have the beginning opportunity to sell yourself to that company. So you need energy, firm handshake, good eye contact. I mean, those things, that's why we know that most hiring decisions are made in the first 2 to 3 minutes of an interview. It's not reading the fine print on the fourth page of your resume. It's immediately saying, do I like this person? Do I trust this person? Is this person fun to be around? Is this person going to fit in as part of the team? Fair or not, those are the things that are making decisions. So working on personal skills can transform your job success more so than having another acronym behind your name.
Dan, do we need to change our perspective maybe on security? Are security and freedom mutually exclusive? I mean, the world has changed, so give us a little sense about, you know, how we should approach work today.
We really do need a fresh look and change our perspective on that. A lot of people talk about freedom, especially the younger workers coming in. They want freedom. They don't want to be micromanaged, but yet they want guaranteed paychecks, guaranteed medical insurance benefits. Those don't go together. The more guarantees that you have, the more freedom you've given up. So you just have to decide, where do I want to be on that continuum? Nothing wrong with choosing a place where you want to be, but you can't have maximum freedom and have security. But we have to be careful about what we think security is. I mean, I spoke to the gang down here, the executives down here at the Saturn plant, just south of where I live in Franklin, Tennessee, when they closed the plant. Some of those guys had been with General Motors for 30 years. They were totally confident they had security like nobody else in the country. No, it was an illusion. All they were doing was getting a paycheck as long as the company was making money. As soon as the company wasn't making money, they didn't have security. The company says, we can't do this anymore, and you're gone. So usually what people talk about as security is really an illusion. It's not real in today's world. General Douglas MacArthur said, security is your ability to produce. So we go back to the clearer you are about understanding what it is you do well, what has unique value, what makes you remarkable, that will offer you security. Even if you go from job to job, company to company, that's where you get security. It's not from having a company agree to pay, give you a paycheck on Friday. That's a very temporary, and it's an illusion in terms of security.
And we've only got about, I guess, officially 2 minutes left. Do you have a 90-second story of someone living their dream? Maybe the one is a recent someone that you've coached, or just what's one of your favorite encouraging stories about someone that has gone through the process and found what they're gifted to do?
We have so many stories coming in every day. I'm just privileged to be on the receiving end of those, people who are really discovering, perhaps for the first time, how God has gifted and prepared them and how they're getting a new sense of freedom in being open to new opportunities. But one I've got here in my office, I'm looking at a beautiful, beautiful painting done by a young man who came to me as a pastor. And he had had a dramatic conversion and thought that the best thing he could possibly do would be a pastor. And so he went to seminary, got ordained in his pastor of a church, miserable, miserable time of his life, and came to me. The church actually sent him to see me, and I said, you know, who sold you this particular bill of goods. Well, I thought this would be the most godly thing to do. I said, well, does it fit you? What is it that when you're doing it, you really come alive? And he described going into a room in his house and locking the door and putting on Beethoven or Mozart, and he would just paint. Well, I had him quit everything that he was doing, including pastoring a church. He was also working as a night clerk at Holiday Inn, just tried to keep the lights on in his house. But he started painting, doing faux finishes, and in that period of time, then moved into just doing the dramatic pieces that he does today. The one I've got here in my office that he gave me just out of appreciation is a $10,000 piece. Here's the key. He says, I have way more opportunity to minister to people today than I ever did as a pastor. When we are in alignment with how God has gifted us, authentically lined up, that's where we get the greatest release, sense of purpose and fulfillment of our calling.
Our time is gone, but it's been a great hour again with Dan Miller. Check it out. Details online, 48days.com. That's 48days.com. You're listening to Connecting Faith.